This episode is brought to you by the Canby Liquor Store. Yep, they're still open. There's no scientific evidence that says alcohol cures COVID, but hey, it's worth a shot, right? Find them in the Canby Fred Meyer Shopping Center.
This episode is also brought to you by Oddmo's Pizza in Canby. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to the Canby Now podcast,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
And if it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Bricks and Mini Figs Canby, an independently owned franchise of a nationwide collection of stores selling new and used Lego sets, pieces, and figures, reopened to the public on Saturday without requiring employees to wear face coverings. This is one of the five mandatory guidelines the governor's office has set for retail stores to limit the spread of COVID-19. Later that day, the president of Bricks and Minifigs North America told the Canby Now podcast that Thornton's comments did not represent the brand and that, per its franchise agreement, the Canby store would be expected to follow all federal, state, and local regulations. Owner David Thornton explained his position in a video on his store's Facebook page Friday afternoon that has since been removed. He began by channeling his inner Nancy Pelosi, holding up a copy of Governor Kate Brown's guidelines for reopening Oregon, then tearing them in half. "I'm not following that advice. It's not right. It's not. I'm sorry," he said, then held up a copy of the United States Constitution. "This is the only advice I'm following here, folks. We've played their games enough. We can't do this much longer. I can't handle it." Thornton says he has made face coverings available for his staff, and they are welcome to wear them if they so choose, but he is not forcing them to, and he will not wear one himself. To him, it's a matter of personal freedom, as he explains in the video. "This is a personal thing," he said. "I can't mandate it. I can't force my employees, and I can't force my customers to wear a mask in my store. It won't work for me. It barely works now. And if I can't see the smiles, if I have to hide, if I have to pretend that wearing a mask is keeping me safe instead of keeping me quiet, then I can't face your children, and I can't face the families we serve." Thornton said he would also not force his customers to wear masks in the store, which is not required under the guidelines, only strongly encouraged. "I'm not going to put X's on the floor," he said. "I'm not going to force your children and your families to interact with my employees through plexiglass. I'm not going to make you guys line up outside and wait your turn and only touch the things that you're supposed to touch. No, no, no. That's not what Bricks and Minifigs Canby is." At several points in the video, Thornton invited people to disagree with him. He invited them to follow the guidelines that make them comfortable. Wear a mask and gloves, or don't. Wear only a bathing suit if you want. Just please wear shoes. "I believe that human beings were meant to be free," he said. "I believe they have personal freedom to love who they want, worship who they want. I believe they can follow any medical practice they want as long as they're not hurting anybody. And my medical practices have not hurt anyone." In the end, Thornton said he couldn't follow mandates that he felt so fundamentally change what his store is all about. "The kids need a place for magic," he said, "and I'm not going to turn this into, you know, a robot processing zone. If all of this is distilled into the financial transaction just to get you in, get the product as quickly as possible, and get you out of here, that's not the business I'm in. I'm in that business, and I'm not going to do it. Ammon McNeff, president of the Utah-based Bricks and Minifigs North America, said he talked with Thornton Saturday after the CNP's story was published and they came to an understanding. He's obviously very impassioned about the issues at hand, which have been difficult for many of our stores and our entire franchise system, McNeff said. But while we applaud his right to express his views on a personal level, he was not authorized to do so using the franchise brand platform that is Bricks and Minifigs. McNeff said Bricks and Minifigs would work with the Canby store to either bring it into compliance with the statewide guidelines for retail occupancy, including those pertaining to COVID-19, or transition back to a form of serving customers where masks and other restrictions would not be in place, such as e-commerce or curbside pickup. If he's going to have his store open, he will be following the state guidelines in that regard, McNeff said. Our number one concern is the safety of our customers, employees, and owners. Clackamas County has met many of the prerequisites for opening its economy in the wake of the COVID-19 shutdowns. However, it still falls short in key areas of testing, contact tracing, isolation facilities, and personal protective equipment supply for first responders. That's according to the county's draft reopening plan, which was completed by staff this week. It was made available to the public on the county's website in advance of a hearing before the Board of Commissioners on Tuesday. The county meets Governor Kate Brown's 7 requirements for declining prevalence of COVID-19, testing capacity, outbreak planning preparedness, healthcare capacity, and supply of PPE at the county's 4 hospitals. But it has not met specific criteria for establishing testing sites accessible to underserved communities, hiring at least 15 contract tracers per 100,000 residents, making hotel rooms available for COVID-19 patients who cannot self-isolate, and having enough PPE available to meet the needs of the county's first responders. One of the most difficult reopening hurdles for the county to clear has been hiring and training enough contact tracers to track the recent contacts of each person who tests positive for COVID-19. The county had 8 contact tracers on staff when the coronavirus pandemic began, who traced the outbreaks of sexually transmitted diseases such as hepatitis and syphilis. Based on population, they need at least 63 full-time tracers to meet the government's requirements, including some of whom are able to work in multiple languages and cultures. The county has already expanded its staff of tracers to 21 and plans to hire another 20 by the end of the week, according to the draft report. The county recently learned that they don't actually have to have hired the necessary contact tracers in order to be approved for reopening. They just need the plan for meeting the requirement within the time frame required by the state. Another prereq the county has not yet met is to provide accommodations for those who test positive for the virus and do not have a safe, stable place to self-isolate. The county currently has contracted with one such location, the Alton Collins Retreat Center in Eagle Creek, which can provide housing for up to 20 individuals with case management by Do Good Multnomah and wellness checks provided by Clackamas Fire District paramedics. The county has identified 6 more potential sites, which would accommodate lodging up to 300 individuals. These include the Grove Camp and Retreat Center in Canby, Snoozin' in Wilsonville, and Best Western in Oregon City. Despite the challenges, the county believes it will meet the 7 criteria and be ready to apply for reopening Friday, May 22nd, assuming county commissioners sign off this week. Once submitted, the county's application for reopening is subject to the approval of the Governor's Office and Oregon Health Authority. Last week, Governor Brown approved 31 of the 33 counties that had applied to begin reopening on May 15th. The two she denied were Marion, one of the state's largest and most severely impacted counties, and neighboring Polk. "My job is to make hard decisions, even when they are unpopular," the governor said in a press conference Thursday. "When it comes to the safety and health of Oregonians, the buck stops here." Counties who are approved for phase one may begin the limited reopening of their businesses, restaurants, bars, personal services, church, theater, and health clubs under new sector-specific guidelines, physical distancing restrictions, and limited occupancy requirements. They must remain at phase one for at least 3 weeks before they can apply for the second phase of reopening. The Clackamas County Board of Commissioners will review the draft plan and decide whether to proceed at a hearing scheduled for 10 a.m. Tuesday. Residents are invited to participate via Zoom or by phone. For details on how to join, find this story on our website at cambynowpod.com. It's not just people who are being quarantined after possible exposure to the novel coronavirus. Now, books are too. One of the biggest challenges to reopening the Canby Public Library in the wake of the COVID-19 crisis has been the returning of used materials. Many stores, businesses, and even restaurants have solved the problem of being able to safely deliver products and services to the public while minimizing contact and exposure. But what about a transaction that goes the other direction, with people handling a book for days or weeks and then dropping it into a small enclosed space with dozens of other materials, which are then received by a small group of city employees? To this point, the library has dealt with the issue by simply locking the book drop and leaving it closed. All materials that were lent out when the library closed on March 13th have simply remained with whoever happened to have them at the time. Don't worry, no fines have been accruing in those 2 months. But if you're finally ready to unload them, the library return slot is opening this week. The book drop will be open to receive library materials only on Mondays from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. starting today. They will be quarantined for a minimum of 72 hours before being handled by staff. This schedule allows sufficient time for the materials to be safely quarantined prior to being checked in, reshelved, and hopefully checked out again, Mayor Brian Hodson explained during a community update on Wednesday. If you're tired of having those materials at home, you can now start bringing them back. The cracking of the book drop is part of the first phase of the library's reopening plan, which also includes staff being available for a wide variety of phone assistance from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Just call 503-266-3394. Staff members are available to answer questions and provide assistance such as how to download electronic books, online resources and databases to help with your kids' online classes, how to use popular online meeting tools such as Zoom, and how to file your taxes or unemployment forms, Hodson said. Staff have already been providing virtual programming, including story time and other activities, on the library's website and Facebook page. They've also added instant access to free library materials online. Residents age 5 and older who do not have a library card can register for an e-card. Looking forward, Library Director Irene Green said the staff will be able to begin its first contact interaction with patrons once Clackamas County is approved to enter Phase 1 of the governor's plan for reopening Oregon. At that time, they will start arranging curbside pickup for the more than 270 holds that have been sitting on the shelves for the past 2 months. "These are the same holds people couldn't get when we closed on March 13th, Green told the Canby Now podcast. "They will be by appointment. It's going to take a lot of staff time contacting everyone to see if they still want them and then arrange for curbside pickup." A second resident at Countryside Living has died from complications of the novel coronavirus and other underlying terminal medical conditions. The resident was an 83-year-old woman who tested positive April 20th and died May 7th at Countryside. She was the second confirmed case of COVID-19 linked to the facility, which serves only residents with Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. The first confirmed case was also the first death, a 93-year-old woman who also had underlying medical conditions and passed away on April 27th. Countryside spokeswoman Michelle Quinn said the second resident had been on hospice care prior to being diagnosed with the coronavirus, and it wasn't initially clear if her death would be deemed COVID-related. However, county public health experts informed the facility that COVID-19 was considered a contributing factor and that the death would be included in the state's official count. We have had additional staff test negative, and at this point are still testing residents if they develop symptoms based on the guidance from the Oregon Department of Human Service, Clackamas County Health, or at the specific request from the family or their doctor, Quinn said. All previous positive residents and employees are still doing well. The facility has reported a total of 7 cases for residents, 5 of which are still considered active at this time. Residents who test positive are being quarantined to their rooms for a minimum of 14 days, then monitored for symptoms for an additional 3 days. 3 employees have also tested positive, one of whom is still under the 14-day quarantine. That's a total of 10 cases for Countryside, a number that has not changed in 2 weeks. In its past 2 weekly reports, the Oregon Health Authority has reported 12 cases linked to the long-term care facility in downtown Canby. The discrepancy appears to be that the OHA's number refers to residents, staff, and close contacts, which Countryside has not been tracking. All of the Countryside's cases have been contained to the North Building, which is larger and located across First Street from the newer South Building. Canby has seen 29 confirmed cases of the novel coronavirus, according to the OHA, which only recently began sharing weekly case counts by zip code. Deaths are still being reported only at the county level. As of Sunday morning, Clackamas has been linked to 9 of the state's 137 deaths. Voting was perhaps the one aspect of Oregon life that did not require significant changes in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic. With 5 days left to vote in the May primary, Clackamas County Clerk Sherry Hall reports that voter turnout does not appear to have been affected. Actually, turnout is up compared to this point 4 years ago, with 31% of ballots having been returned as of Sunday afternoon. That's up significantly from the 27.6% that had been turned in on the Saturday before Election Day in 2016. The pandemic is challenging for everyone, Hall said in a press release, but at least we're seeing an uptick in voter turnout and civic participation. This is possibly because so many people are at home during this time. The biggest issue facing Canby voters is a 20-year, $75 million school bond measure, which would increase safety, upgrade technology, and repair and improve school facilities. It would not raise taxes, but would continue the current rates. Canby voters will also help decide 4 races that could significantly impact the leadership makeup of the county. 3 seats on the Board of Commissioners and the sheriff's position are up for grabs. It's too late to mail your ballot and ensure it gets counted, so find a drop-off box instead. There are 2 in Canby, 1 outside the Canby Civic Center and Library, and 1 outside the Arneson Garden behind Fred Meyer. For in-depth coverage of the Canby school bond, including a detailed summary of all the items that would be included, visit our website, canbynowpod.com. And for early election results Tuesday night, stay tuned to the Canby Now podcast on Facebook and Twitter, @CanbyNow.
Canby, Direct Link is here for you. In these troubling times, the last thing anyone should have to worry about is how to stay connected to their loved ones, work, education, and news. The expert staff at Direct Link are all based right here in Canby and are committed to keeping those critical internet, video, and voice connections on and strong for their members. They have signed the Keep Americans Connected pledge from the FCC, which means they have promised to keep students online to continue their studies, local businesses connected to their customers and employees, and all their members virtually in touch with what matters most to them, no matter how far away they may be. So if you have DirectLink as a provider, go ahead and reach out to your loved ones on a traditional telephone, watch a child's home recital over an internet video chat, download your favorite local podcast, I mean, do we even have to ask what it is, or enjoy a favorite movie at home, because DirectLink will keep our friends, neighbors, and local businesses connected, no matter what. We're all in this together.
We would like to extend our undying gratitude to Canby Now Plus member, Vicki Williams. Thank you, Vicki. We rely on your monthly contributions to continue this work that we absolutely love. To find out how you can become one of the coolest people on the planet, one of our supporters on Patreon, visit canbynowpod.com/plus.
All right. So for the Canby conversation today, I think I'll just let you introduce yourself.
All right. Well, I'm Bob O'Black, resident of Dickey Prairie, which is near Malala, Oregon. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the Piano in the Park program. This started out probably 6 months ago. I take my garbage to the Woodburn dump, and I happened to drive up and see a moving van, and I heard music in the background, and it turns out that the moving van was dumping pianos in the trash can.
They were playing it
before they were ready to dump it in the trash can.
Yeah.
And I always said, well, they pumping music into the dump these days? And I went alongside. You never know, right? So they were just playing it the last note and tipped it into the trash
can. Sad.
Oh, it was sad. I couldn't believe I heard a thump, because I just, And I just was in disbelief to hear that sound. And they said, well, there's one underneath this one we just dumped.
Yeah.
So they had just gotten rid of two pianos.
Where did they come from?
Well, that was my question.
Yeah. Well,
who are you guys?
Yeah.
And they said, Malala. And I said, Malala, that's where I live.
Yeah.
He said, well, we have a business next door to the Spot Tavern. And we just have excess pianos and nobody wants them. And let's get rid of them. And so they just dumped the pianos. Now, there's some of them they get parts out of. But anyway, most of them are just dumped. And the one that was playing there while I was dumping my trash was perfectly good piano. It was sounding good.
Yeah.
So anyway, long story short, I approached Ken Fetters. And when I discovered this guy next door to Ken Fetters' business, the main shop where he has some art.
Yeah.
He has like 30 artists in his shop. And I said, Ken, music's art. Why don't we do something with these pianos instead of throwing them in the trash can?
Yeah.
And so he knew David Nichols, who runs this business, and contacted him and said, sure, I got extra pianos. And so we married an artist, David Alexander, to the piano that was in excess. And the first piano was painted by David, and it went into our park, into Fox Park, next door to the library.
Yeah.
And David did a wonderful job. He painted scenes of local Malala scenes, such as the Skydive Oregon, the Malala River Corridor, Shady Dell Park. He had just kind of captured the essence of Malala in a mural fashion on the piano. And he said, play me. And kids come up now and play on the piano. It hasn't been vandalized. It's still somewhat in tune. And and it's just a nice piece of art in the park. And then another piano came into existence. This happened to belong to David's family. And we had another park in Malala called Long Park next door to the fire station. And David's thoughts were, fire station, that's a first responder, you know. People that help others. And so he said to himself, I'm going to create a piano art that represents all the first responders. And the piano that is here in my shop is that piano that just evokes so much emotion. As a matter of fact, David Nichols, who is dealing in pianos daily as his business, he said this is the first street piano that's brought tears to his eyes. Mm-hmm. He was emotionally moved by what David had painted.
Yeah.
So when I saw the piano, I just, again, was moved. There was an EMT picture underneath the piano keyboard. My wife had been battling cancer, and I've had to take her out through the ambulance and put her on a stretcher to take her to the hospital. And that scene that is underneath the keyboard just brings tears to my eyes, because the way that EMTs were compassionate, and they, with care, took my wife out of the upstairs bedroom and into the ambulance. So there's just so much personal emotion in what he's painted.
Yeah, it's a beautiful scene, and it's not one that you normally see. Like, you see, you know, you've got the firefighter carrying the kid out here on the side. You know, those kind of scenes are sort of classic,
yes,
you know, representations. But the work of the EMTs, which is, I mean, frankly, much more common than, hang on, I got my kids here too, much more common than, obviously, fires happen and whatnot, but actually, yes, like, rescuing a kid or rescuing, yes, a person in that way from a fire, much less common than EMTs doing this hard work of someone in a medical emergency, wheeling them into the ambulance, which you see here.
Well, and the way they do it with such care and compassion and with dignity.
Dignity, yeah.
And I think that's the key word, dignity. They don't, you know, you're under stress to begin with when that situation takes place, and they do it just in a loving fashion.
Yeah.
And so we're just blessed with the Malala Fire Department having the EMT that we have.
Yeah.
So
Todd Gary of Canby Fire District, long time. He when he retired, we had him on the show, and I'll never forget, he said, I'm gonna have to paraphrase, I just said I never forget it, but it was something like, you know, I asked him what to kind of sum up what he does, you know, and why it matters. And he said that we get to do a good thing on somebody's worst day.
Yes.
You know, we get
absolutely
to be good, do something good or something kind for somebody on the worst day. And so, like, he gave an example of one time, you know, somebody was losing their house. The fire was actively raging and they were fighting it. And he said, if there's one thing that we can try to get out of there for you, what would it be? And they were able to do that. It was something that was, you know, it was like flowers or some dried flowers, I think, from a wedding.
Yeah.
But it actually hadn't burned yet, and they were able to get it. So.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They are so caring and just sensitive to the needs of the community. So anyway, I guess the piano is just David Alexander. I have to give him so much credit for the vision that he had in painting this piano. So we have now two pianos for the city of Malala Parks. The first piano was put in with just two people, is myself and the artist and photographer and Ken Fetters. I'll take back three or four people.
Yeah.
So anyway, but it wasn't much hoopla. We just put it in the park.
Yeah.
And this piano, because of the emotion and the message that it sends, and especially now with this COVID thing going on, there are so many first responders out there in the not only nurses and doctors taking care of people, but just in general, the food service people, the grocery attendants. So, you know, when we think about the piano and the symbolization is, you know, military and fire and medical, but today the first responders, it's a bigger audience when you think about it, what they're doing to help us survive daily. So we don't want to put this piano in the park and not make a big scene. And I'm so glad that you're here today to just give us an opportunity to thank the first responders, not only the EMTs and fire department, but all the other folks that are helping us during this COVID crisis that we're in. And I think that's part of what I want to get the message out, is that we want to honor everyone that's serving their community. And this piano symbolizes that. It's more than just a piano with some artwork. It symbolizes the hard work and compassion that's out there in this day. So this piano is one of many pianos that we want to paint and get different kinds of messages from the mural work. And one of them now is a baby grand slated for Adams Cemetery. The piano business there in Malala, David Nichols, has a baby grand reserved for us, and it'll go up in Adams Cemetery. There's a gazebo up at Adams Cemetery, and David Alexander was slated to paint that, but he's moving to North Carolina to take care of his dad. So we have another artist kind of right now. We think that he's committed to do it. I won't mention his name until I get the commitment.
Right, sign on the dotted line.
And we have the piano, and it'll go up to Adams Cemetery. And then there's a park called Ivor Davies Park in Malala that has a picnic structure, and the piano has been selected, and we're going to get an artist to paint this piano. Again, we haven't earmarked the artist. Mm-hmm. So that'll make four pianos for Malala. So that's pretty much all that we're aware of, where we can put a piano in Malala. So I wanted to ask myself, well, what's next? Because we have all these pianos. So we have multiple cities, and I could read them for you, or you could read them, but you can see one of them is from your hometown.
Right. We got Canby, Oregon City, Estacada, Gresham, Beaverton, Boring, Staten, Hubbard, Aurora, the Oregon Garden, and Silverton as well.
And Staten, I think, should be in there too.
Oh, yeah. Did I miss Staten?
No, that's Staten. You got Staten.
Yeah.
So, we've already been to the Estacada Art Department. Ken Fetters and myself made a presentation of this piano in the park story in Malala to their art community. And they said, oh, that's a great idea. So it's up to their community now to, there's lots of pianos that they can get access to. And they have an art community that wants to do that. Mm-hmm. So I expect them to kind of take the ball.
Yeah, Canby has a fairly well-known gazebo as well.
I know exactly where that is. So we want to find an artist, and we've got pianos. That's not a problem because we're throwing them in the trash can. So my vision is that these communities will have pianos in the park and have others, you know, walk up and play them and beautify the city with their art and have the music played by whoever wants to walk up and play them.
So I had never heard of a street piano. To me, when I was a kid, we had a piano in our house, and it was not a kid's thing. It was not, you know, it like they were these fragile things. It was not like a recorder or a kazoo or something like that. It's a kid's instrument. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That you would envision.
Roped off, and they were.
Yeah. Not in something you would envision being outside.
Well, and as long as they're under covered structure, these are painted with industrial paint, if you will. They're lacquer coated, the marine clear coat on them, so they're waterproof. The mural part is waterproof. The backing, the soundboard, the one that we have in Fox Park, has a plastic barrier on it to keep the rain from splashing in. And so even in the wind and rain, I mean, it survived all winter. The one in Fox Park is it's playing and it's still working just fine. And I think, you know, we want people to come up and play it. And so that's the intent.
They were trash. I mean,
if it's a little out of tune, like, who cares?
It's not like it came out of a museum or, you know, a piano store and was thrown out. So this is giving it a new, different life.
Yeah. And I went on, I went online and Googled pianos and street pianos, just different terms. Yeah. And it turns out there are organizations that track where all these pianos are. I will send you the website link to a worldwide map of these street pianos. There's some in Salem. I didn't know it. Portland. There's some in Portland.
Wow.
So this is not necessarily a unique and new idea.
Yeah.
But it is somewhat new and unique for our town. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, so we'll post that in the show notes for you guys if you want to check that out. Especially the one in Fox Park, are there any cool stories that you've seen, you know, or just moments that you've seen of people using it?
I've been to Fox Park and I walked up there to the piano when a couple of kids were, matter of fact, they were just a little bit older than your children here. I've got a photograph of them. It's part of what I've given you. So here's the picture of them playing the piano here somewhere. I can get my hands here. There it is. So I asked the dad here, these two kids were playing on the piano, and I asked the father, I said, would you mind if I took their picture? And they said, yeah, give me permission to do that. And he said, you know, we were thinking about giving them piano lessons, and this is great. Now it's in the park. They can come up to it and plink on the keys and see if they have an inkling to want to learn more about how to play a piano.
Yeah.
So I think it's an opportunity to inspire future artists musicians in the community.
I love it. Both of them, David did such a great job with the, you know, using the piano as his canvas and just making it very visually appealing. You know, it says play me actually in words, but it also just says play me just with how colorful and fun and in visually appealing it is.
I'm really kind of saddened that he's leaving our community. He has to take care of his dad in North Carolina.
Yeah.
So he's unfortunately going to be leaving our community. Yeah. But there are other artists in our community that I think will, you know, rally to the cause and help us get more pianos placed in the park.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that.
Well, you've been teasing us this whole time. Do you play?
No, I don't.
You don't play?
I don't play.
Can the kids try it out?
Absolutely.
Do you kids want to try to play the piano? Okay. Yeah, let's hear what you got.
Let's do it. Go for it.
Sure. Go for it. Okay. Well, I'm just going to finish talking to Bob, okay? All right. Well, anything else you wanted to say?
Well, I think, the Piano in the Park program is kind of been integrated into the committee that was formed by the city administration, the council and mayor. Ken Fetters is a chair of the Arts and Cultural Committee, I think is what it's called. And the Piano in the Park program is sub-category of that, to bring arts and culture into the city of Mooloolah. And as they've developed a visioning for Mooloolah for the next 25 years, part of that vision is to provide a friendly and safe environment. There should be something of resilience, history, culture, and a location. So these are kind of key areas of their visioning document. I think it would be important maybe to talk to Ken Fetters and Leota Childress. She's the city council person and president of the city council that developed this visioning document. The visioning document's in this, and I think I gave it to you. So I think there's a bigger story for the city of Mooloolah in this visioning document, and the Piano in the Park program is a part of that vision that they have to grow Mooloolah in a friendly cultural way, to preserve the history that's here in town and then expand it and make it a nice place to live. It's a real community, and it's really it's got a lot of future for it, I think. And I'm just excited to be a part of it.
Absolutely.
Grown up here.
Well, thank you, Bob. Thanks for caring about this stuff. Thanks for caring about, thanks for being sad when you see something as beautiful as a piano getting thrown away when it could be something beautiful again. So thanks for that, and to Ken and David and all the other folks that are involved. And thanks for telling us about it.
You bet. Thank you.
Joining us once again on the Canby Now podcast is Derek Hill of Advantage Mortgage. He joins us on the line, of course. How are things in the industry right now with all the crazy stuff going on?
It's a little crazy, but not too crazy. I mean, we definitely have seen some things tighten up. Obviously, with any kind of uncertainty, banks tend to tighten their guidelines. So the great thing about being a broker is that even though some of our lenders are tightening up, we have others that aren't. We have a lot of lenders that are just status quo. They're like, hey, we still have all the same channels. We still have all the same credit score requirements. Interest rates may be a little bit higher because of the level of risk, but they're still funding loans. So actually March was one of the biggest months of our company's funding. So we're still funding loans. There's still people out there buying. There's still people out there selling. We have to make sure that we're not, spreading the virus and whatnot. But yeah, everything's still moving along.
Cool. So how can people get in touch with you right now?
The easiest way is just call the office, 503-266-5800, or send us an email, derek@findtheadvantage.com. But just call the office and we'd be happy to help.
Awesome. Thanks, Derek. Hang in there.
All right. You as well. Derek Hill, NMLS 50183, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And now, a reflection on the state of the human condition from Canby Mayor Brian Hodson.
It is trying times for all of us. The pressures are different for each and every one of us and for each of our families. I am watching through social media friendships dissolve. Families become divided because we are losing sight of the human connection that we have with each other. Arguments of open or don't open, masks versus no masks, sit in a parking lot, have breakfast versus not sit in a parking lot and not have breakfast, shut the businesses down entirely or just leave it alone. I would love to blame the erosion of our concerns for the for humanity and the human condition on our mainstream media. I can't do that. I won't do that. I can't blame it on the federal government or our local and state and county governments. Can't do that either. We all have a couple of things that we can control in our lives. Our attitudes, how we react to a situation, and how do we choose to treat each other. We choose how to respond to adversity. I learned a phrase from my dad years ago. He used the phrase, and I use it today. You can ask Counselor Parker. It's one I use with him often. And that's to seek first to understand before being understood. Understand where your quote-unquote friends on social media are before you berate them into trying to understand you and your position. So you know where I am. There's a diagram. It's a Venn diagram. And the diagram kind of crosses over, right? Three circles. And you've got, this is a plandemic, and people are, it's a political conspiracy, or it's a full-blown economic disaster, or it's truly a serious health situation. And where those three circles come across and intersect, well, that's where I'm at. I may have moved in between a couple or in and out of one or another, but for the most part, I've been in the middle there. And it's a challenge. But all in all, I think a lot of us are in the middle or have moved in and out of that as well. We need to be civil with each other. We need to be courteous to each other. We need to be kind and we need to be loving to each other. The next 3, 6, maybe 12 months will be crucial to how we impact the human condition and how we impact Canby and each other. We as Canby have gone through a lot of challenges as a city in the 150 years that we have been around. 150 years, that's what we're supposed to be celebrating this year. Instead, we're bickering, maybe we're fighting. Many of us, they think, are finding that silver lining with our families, the ability not to have to run around to sports activities and be able to just be and reconnect and talk about math and history in school and teach. We will get through this. We need to do it together. Canby does things the Canby way. And all the times that I've been part of the Canby way in the 15 or 16 years that I've been in the city, it has been together. So I'm asking, we're very, very crucial point. Businesses are going to open up. There's plans. It may not be as fast as some, or it's too fast for others. We need to work together and we need to understand where each person is at in these next couple of months, maybe the next year. I am one of those people that is on that high risk list. It is concerning. I worry about it. I work in an environment with seniors I worry about it. It concerns me. Things are going to open up and I have to talk to my employees about where they're going and to stay cognizant of the fact that we serve a delicate part of the population. So Camby, please keep civility in mind, love on each other, and we will get through this together.
This episode is brought to you by the Wild Hair Saloon in Canby in Oregon City. The coronavirus has changed much about how the Wild Hair does business, but it has not changed the where, the why, or who they do it for. Owners Joan and Darren Monin, both lifelong Canby residents, are as committed to the community they love as they've ever been. Even as the service industry has been deeply impacted by the current public health situation, they continue to rally behind Canby, its people, and especially those most in need. We are so grateful for their continued support in this difficult time. As we've always said, the Wild Hair is the place where Canby goes to eat and have fun. That hasn't really changed. You just have to take your food and, you know, go eat it somewhere else. Until the governor's stay-home orders expire, the Wild Hair's friendly staff will be there to handle your carry-out orders Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. They continue to offer their full menu of delicious food options, and they're doing a weekly meal deal that serves a family of four for only $25. Find the latest on their Facebook page, full menu available online at thewildhairsaloon.net. Give them a holler today at 503-651-4273.
The Canby Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Canby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Canby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.